by the two people from Free 103.9, and Nadine will introduce this. But this stream is being provided by two providers. Free 103 is one of the groups. Nadine will be able to explain this better. I'm still not, like, kind of clear in how this all works. But CKLN here at Ryerson University is the radio station which is providing the stream which gets our signal to Free 103.9, and we would like to thank them from the bottom of our ears for bringing this to us. And now, here is Nadine to introduce our next speakers and clarify a little bit about who's doing what there in terms of getting the signal from A to B.
Hi there. We're about to start our next session with Tiana Kennedy and Matt Mitkus. They're presenting a session on Free 103.9, but they're also, you'll also see them helping out a lot over the weekend. And I'd just like to thank you guys for being such an incredible help already, and it's only one day into the conference. It was great what you did last night to help us out, so I really appreciate that. So I would just like to mention also, I think from the first conference we put on, Galen came to us and said, you know, we're interested in what you're doing. We'd really like to broadcast it. Is it an option for you? And at that time, it wasn't. So I'm just really happy that we've been able to do it 2 years in a row, and that we can keep doing it in the future. It's wonderful to have a sort of venue that's beyond what we can do, and the interest to make it all happen. And I'm not going to talk about Free 103 because you guys are, so I'll leave it to you both. Tiana and Matt, sorry.
To do is, well, hello. Gonna take a moment to peruse the website really quick just to give you an idea of who we are right now. And while I do that, Matt is going to pass out a little pamphlet or a little flyer. And then we're going to talk about the genesis of Free 103 and a little bit about transmission art and a little bit about some of the projects that we do. If we have, we're just going to kind of breeze through it because we've had a nice introduction to radio art and transmission art this morning. And then we'd just like to open it up for a question and answer at the end, so we can, if you guys have more questions about the website or if you want to hear some of our own work or ask us about what we do as transmission artists, then we'll wait till the very end for that. So as we heard earlier, Free 103 is a nonprofit arts organization focused on establishing and cultivating the genre transmission arts by promoting artists who express ideas around transmission as a creative medium for creative experience. And we do this in multiple ways. We have two spaces. One is in upstate New York, and that space has a burgeoning a new nation residency program, and there will be a performance space. Right now we have performances outside during the summer, but we're breaking down ground on a new building that will be a kind of just a multiple-use space. There will be an archive and a study center, and it's a really great resource for all of us who make experimental radio to experiment with the form so that it's not just sound art, which was kind of expressed last night, but it is also you can work with anything on the electromagnetic spectrum. So we do video transmissions and, you know, walkie-talkies and remote control airplane things. You know, it's like whatever you guys feel like working on, you're more than welcome to. Matt runs.
I run the Brooklyn space, which was part of the genesis of Free103.9.org and also Free103.9, the micro radio station. And right now it serves as a production facility for our artists to do live webcasts and also a live performance space where artists can perform in front of a small, intimate audience, be broadcast on the web. And recently we were very excited about adding a webcam abilities so that there's also a visual element added.
We also sort of function as a gallery. We have a roster of 18 artists that we promote. We have an online radio station, a dispatch series, which is basically a record label. We have a performance exhibition transmission series, so we function as an art collective as well. We have archives of 7 years of sound work that we've been...
That we've been codifying and having volunteer archivists come in so that we can have an online resource of past performances that that we have made. Perhaps you may like to show them around the perhaps the our co-conspirators, as we call them, and you can see the rather large list of people that we have worked with.
And this is, I mean, we don't update this that frequently, so this is probably 1/100th of the people that have passed through the gallery, you know.
Okay, well, that having been said, let's talk a bit about the genesis of Free 103.9, and I'm going to take you back to the early to mid-1990s in Tampa, Florida, and a small bohemian artist district, which many of you may be familiar with in theory and also in practice, of how once a group of artists finds a workable loft space and an aesthetically pleasing district that they can afford, it's not too long before the forces of gentrification descend and things have to change. As we had noticed this, some friends of ours, myself being Matt Mikus and Tom Rowe, who is also one of the co-founders of Free 103 at that time, were small shopkeepers who were involved in the local music and art scene, and many of our friends were curating spaces where live performances could happen, and suddenly they could no longer happen. And so a friend of ours who had some prior naval training in radio communications decided with Tom, I, and another friend of ours, Chuck Stevens, a.k.a. Chuck Guts, a.k.a. Transmaniacon MC, decided that if we can't have a physical space, let's take to the airwaves and have a virtual space. And so the genesis of 87X in Tampa, Florida happened in the early 90s, and this was very well received by the community. It was also very exciting for us to realize that with a couple hundred dollars that we were suddenly able to get onto the airwaves. And as the station passed through a couple of hands, Tom moved to New York, and a little bit more about 87X. In Florida, we found that there was a network across the U.S. in the mid-90s that was loosely banding itself as the micro radio movement, and this in part was spearheaded by the efforts of Stephen Dunifer from Free Radio Berkeley in California. And basically what they were encouraging was that since the technology was affordable and available, that people throughout the country engage in acts of civil disobedience in order to force some change in the law. And the goal was to get as many low-power FM radio stations on the air as possible and try to backlog the efforts of the FCC to keep up with all of this. As the 90s wound down, there was a limited amount of success with a low-power FM bill being sort of reluctantly passed in Congress that allowed for some access. So leaving that micro radio model behind, when Tom had moved to New York, we were in contact, I was still in Florida at the time, about what perhaps some of the new notions of being a station that wasn't perhaps as liable to be rated by the FCC as 87X ultimately ended up being rated. And one of our strategies was to broadcast intermittently and to broadcast live events to the local community. And so if there was a show to happen, the neighborhood would get flyered and it would people would be informed to tune in for a period of time. And the transmitter was also moved around the city. And what we had found out was that Free 103.9, the analog micro radio station, had a virtual reach that many people who hadn't heard of the radio, who hadn't heard the radio station actually had heard of the radio station. So this, I think, in Genesis, gave us the notion that perhaps transmission as a medium is something which extends beyond the actual mechanics of the radio station itself, and it can be more of an idea and travel as a viral message, be transmitted through low-tech or no-tech. One of the earliest also programming contents was to focus mostly on live performance and sort of disengage from what the micro radio movement or the community radio model of curated shows, hosts, things that you could regularly expect. What Free 103 curated at the time and still continues to do are things that are involved with live events, unpredictability, and a certain amount of differentness and unexpectedness. What when I had moved to New York to help Tom with these operations, we had gone ahead and I annexed another space below Tom's apartment where there was smaller intimate performances, and then suddenly we had a larger performance space. And the community became more excited, and that more than 10 people could fit in. Now up to 30 or 40 people could come by. And so the word spread, and there was an analog station, and then we decided, well, what's the next thing? We need an internet stream. And in those early days, in my neighborhood, we still didn't have cable. Cable in my neighborhood at that time. So we would go ahead and record the programs at first onto VHS tapes because you could just record the audio and get 6 hours worth of audio on a VHS tape and therefore, you know, not have to have somebody worrying about keep plopping in new cassette tapes every 30 minutes or so. And that for our archivists, is the bulk of the work that they are now going ahead and sorting through, and thanks to them for doing that job. While in New York, I had gotten a chance to do some archiving work myself for the New York State Council of the Arts, and my supervisor was interested in my personal work as an artist and what I was excited about, and I began to tell her something about Free 103.9 and micro radio and our ideas, and she was very interested and said, well, this might be something that we might like to help you develop. And fortunately at that time, Tom's wife-to-be, Galen Joseph Hunter, had worked at EAI, Electronic Arts Intermix, and they're the pretty much premier video arts representatory agency. And so the three of us were able to put together quite an attractive proposal and thus began to develop what we decided to term transmission art. And again, this is something that we are trying to extend beyond perhaps people's notions of radio and what you can expect from perhaps something that you're just only tuning in and turning a dial on in your home or your car. And so, Tiana?
So that's when I got involved. They had a call. I was in grad school at the time at NYU taking a class with Alan Weiss and reading Breathless and reading Wireless Imagination and getting excited. And we had set up a little part of Free 103's continuing project is an education initiative called Radio Lab that talks about micro radio and the possibilities of the wireless spectrum. And so I had sort of attended one of those and helped set up a micro radio station out in Bushwick, and I just got more and more involved as a musician and a curator. I play the cello. I ended up playing a lot on a lot of shows. And I started my own little radio show, and now I'm part of the team. But at any rate, so it's been interesting to see the nonprofit grow from a venue with occasional broadcast to what it is today. So I'm just going to go through this PowerPoint presentation pretty quickly and then open up to Q&A afterwards. We had a good introduction to transmission art, so I'll skip this bit. Unless, do you want to go on?
Well, maybe there's a few things here. Right. Transmission arts practices are informed by the work of the futurists, and I think an unnerving adjunct to what futurism was is their embrace of fascism, and also their embrace of radio. But when we look at the genesis of radio, it inherently is a corporate, industrial, military state apparatus. And I think that a lot of the early works were composed to either acknowledge this or in some ways try to be nice with their programming so as to not offend. And so while you may have celebrated certain things about radio, I think that you were also having to acknowledge either openly or covertly the power structures that are inherent in technology and its distribution.
With kinetic art, I mean, part of what Free 103 is doing is also sculptural installations that deal with the transmission spectrum. So, I mean, just using light and air and, so that's a good... There are early video art collectives, such as Video Freaks, TVTV, Ant Farm, Rain Dance are all good antecedents to what we're doing. I mean, the previous presentation with the communication arts, if you just substitute radio, it's dealing with networks and larger communities and event liveness. And
right. So. What I feel from the early video art collectives that we share a lot in common is their idea of democratic access to media. And I think at that time in the late 60s and early 70s, there was certainly a lot of optimism and a utopian ideology towards the fantastic ability of people to get their video cameras and the spectral notion on the horizon of cable TV, and we all see what cable TV and public access has brought us.
With EAT, it's founded by Kluver and Waldhauer, with artists such as Rauschenberg. It was took place in 1966 in the Armory and developed into a large organization with, I think, 2,000 artists and 2,000 engineers. The idea was to get technically skilled people working with artists, and so we're always looking at the intersection there between technology and art, and that's continues.
I think that it's a very good way in order to bridge perhaps what the academic system seems to codify in putting people into. You are either a creative class or you are a controller, distributor, and we're trying to maybe blur the distinctions between people who may not ordinarily have a dialogue, engineers and artists. Also, I think I would have liked to have added to what has informed transmission art as a practice would be the early pirate radio and freeform radio, in that those aspects were directly challenging the power structures of radio and producing content that may have been offensive or incomprehensible to commercial state control.
We updated the PowerPoint presentation, but it crashed right before the right before I gave it, and this was the old version, so all of our new updates are gone. Sorry. Again, this morning we went over this a bit, but the technologies and tools that we employ are cell phones, telephones, telecommunications, satellite GPS, common radio, specialized radio, archaic radio, Morse code, video transmission, light, sensor motion detectors, remote radio control devices, streaming technologies, antenna sculpture, and usually it's hybrid. It's usually a combination of the above in large sort of event-based situational things. But we also, I'd like to include some of the other things that we didn't add, which were the low-tech or no-tech sort of theoretical-based
applications, such right. as a printing press is a form of transmission, in that it is a form of distribution. The oral tradition itself is a form of transmission. And so as we develop the art form, it's interesting in that we want to go ahead and perhaps reach out to artists who may not exactly be engaged in radio.
Or no Max MSP or whatever. So, again, we use them in performances, compositions, artist multiples, distributable objects, installation, sculpture, theatrical exercises, media interventions, and mobile art. Then Free 103 itself, I mean, we went over what it is today, but as sort of an artist collective, we have a couple of projects that we have taken up to Santa Fe, to Valencia, to Korea, to Poland, and we usually collaborate with sound artists or transmission or radio artists in the area to produce events. And so I'm going to go over a couple of them.
And these are events. Our events are installation-based, and I prefer to call them sort of architectures that we go ahead and create involving low-power FM transmission. And I think one of the first ones that we'll turn into is our event called Tune In, and also Tune Outside. Tune In itself is an idea that was hatched in Genesis way back in Florida by Charles Stevens, a.k.a. Transmit Icon MC, in, again, response to police activities surrounding the rave scene. And although this was a theoretical idea at the time, it took seven or eight years before we had the resources to acknowledge it. But basically, what the idea was, if these large techno gatherings were being shut down because of noise complaints, Chuck had theorized, well, imagine this: if you're in a large event space and there's music playing, but everyone is listening to it by headphones, and there's lights going on, and everyone's dancing, but it's silent, and so nobody knows what's going on. And then he further brainstormed, well, what if you had several radio transmissions, and there were different music styles and DJs playing, and then you had people dancing to completely different styles of music? And this was a great idea, and as it said, it took us forming a nonprofit organization and involving involving the kitchen. Well, at first we actually had a space at the New York Center for Contemporary Media Arts in Queens that allowed us to go ahead and stage this this large event. And basically, what happens is there are 5 to 6 low power FM radio stations set up. 5 to 6 of these performances happen simultaneously with live performers who perform directly. Instead of into amplifiers, they plug their signal into into a low power FM transmitter, and
89.3 FM, 91.9 FM,
silent environment,
99.9 FM, 103.9 FM.
There is also a video program that was curated by the Amateur Surrender, which works from the AI collection. Gary Hill that have a video bearing in the on transmission, and that's what you see in this image here projected behind you, and the audio is streamed, of course, on one of the channels.
Anybody political obligation here, and I think 50,000.
I think what artists tend to like about this is there's a certain intimacy that people can get from their performances, and if your work is particularly keyed to a stereo mix, people generally can get it very, very accurately. Also, from the audience's standpoint, they are being directly engaged in the FM dial, and they're transversing it and going ahead and seeing the juxtaposition of experimental work with the common radio fare.
And also, if they don't like what they're listening to, they can always go to, you know, Hot 97 and listen to whatever it is that they do like.
And in the live concert, you can actually go ahead and have a conversation with somebody if you so choose to, by just taking your headphone off, or perhaps having only one earbud in, and then discussing what you're listening to. And we see a lot of people going ahead and making interactions with the audience, to sharing headphones, and this is something that you don't normally see in a live performance situation. At this Tune in the Kitchen, we had 60 artists, so there were six channels, and I think 10 or 11 artists on each channel. So
you want to talk about school? So you want to talk about school?
What channel are you listening to?
91.9, Carlos Giffoni.
Which channel are you listening to?
Scanner 104.0, Scanner.
Do you like it?
Love it.
Gale, wings of Gale, there is a leaf, there is a feast, I leave, and south, and the Zoo set one double low, not Zoo set one just one double low.
Do you guys
want
to see more, or shall we go ahead?
I think this is the Jimmy. That was a good way to go ahead and show you some of the some of our co-conspirators, and as you can see, there were probably many names that you were familiar with, and for those that you are not familiar with, I would suggest that you check out our co-conspirators page, and you can go ahead and click on any of the names, and you can find more information or a direct link to their website.
This is a similar project in Santa Fe, but I'll just do a quick Do you want to talk about it, or shall we just go through that?
Yes, again, at the Santa Fe Art Institute, we were allowed to go ahead and stage this event there, and we had involving some video artists.
We also had a branch of this. One of the channels that we were broadcasting in Santa Fe took place in Bushwick, New York. So we had a roster of artists there as well. And we lost the video from that. The video documentarian ran off with it, but it existed.
Yes, and I would like to say that tune in, and we were able to get Stana to actually do her violin piece live for us, so that was a nice bonus. There we see the beautiful skies of Santa Fe and our stacked dipole antennas for a couple of the stations. Andrew Neumann, there we are.
Then we have another version, which is Tune Outside, which is similar, except this time we use one frequency and we position the different transmitters far enough away so that the area of broadcast intersects only a little bit. So when you wander around with your radio, you have it tuned to 88.7 or whatever the frequency is, and you wander in and out of these transmission zones, and each zone will, you know, take a different... Some of them will use contact mics and, you know, take the environmental sound. Some of them will remix whatever radio waves are in the area and play with those. Some are interactive, deal with the passerbys. I mean, obviously, it's in sort of an unlimited scope for what you can do with this. But this one in particular took place at the Wave Farm where the residency program is. So these photos are a place where you're welcome to come check out.
Yes, I think here, once again, that instead of in our previous stagings of TuneIn, the environment was very closed and claustrophobic and much more similar to what people were used to as a concert hall. And here, I think, placing the environment outside it sort of widens the scope a bit. And I think for the benefit of our listening audience, let's go ahead and read this wonderful perspective that a performer...
This is our friend Andy Graydon wrote. The Tune Outside event at Free 103.9's Wave Farm in Accra, New York, became an unexpectedly transformative event for me and many other players present that day. Driving 3 hours outside the city to this idyllic spot tucked away in the trees, I wasn't sure what to expect. The transmission techniques of the festival were familiar. 4 live stages of sound transmitted to visitors all over the farm using portable headphone radios as they lounged and roamed at will across the acres of trail, forest, and field. It was a rural setting, however, that made me wonder about the concept. Was transmission art going to be satisfying in an environment already so complete with all the stimulus of a natural world, the stimulus we city dwellers are starved for? Is already so alive. I was afraid that the headphone listening might introduce artificial distance to the community gathered there, a gap that would be difficult to bridge while playing live. What I found, however, and was fortunate to share with the other performers of the day, several of whom you will hear on the disc, was an extended moment of the connection between players, audience, and environment. It was utterly new and enthralling. The first surprise was the intimacy of sound perspective that I could share with listeners. I monitored my own playing for altered field recordings through the radio headphones and realized at the opening of my set that this was exactly what the audience was hearing. None of the usual questions about the diffusion of sound in an acoustic space, bad monitors, weird reflections, etc. The performer's perspective matched the receiver's. This allowed me, my playing, to become more detailed, subtle, and evolving. It was as if I were playing to an intimate audience of one multiplied many times over. This feeling was confirmed as passerby smiled and nodded their approval as they emerged from a wooden path and drifted away again without a word. We were close without being near, attending to minute details of sound no matter what our actual location. A second revelation came in the act of listening. Taking a long, solitary walk with Gil Arnaud and Tom Mulligan's careful work in my ears, I found myself in a kind of slipstream between realities. The natural yet composed sound seemed to open a new dimension that shifted and augmented over my senses and how they were attuned to the environment, creating a compound experience. The live performance was not a single focus of activity, but a strange new layer of real that enlivened everything I encountered on the walk. There was a power invested in the sound by the sense of shifted dimension and transmitted closeness that I had never experienced in playing before, and that has permanently altered my practice of listening and performing. Looking forward to next year. Indie Grade, November 2005, New York City. And we have our friend Anna and Emmanuel Madon, Ryan Hossipel, if 31 down. Here we have people lounging in hammocks, which I highly recommend. We have video transmission as well. Don't want to talk about this?
This was, I can't remember the name of this piece, but there was basically a video that was a camera that was suspended above the whole acreage and then floating, and the image from the video camera was then broadcast. So.
Then we have another version of, you know, using similar equipment, which is a collaborative jam with using four transmitters, a lot of radios that are tuned to each transmitter. And the mix that you hear in the room is a collaborative effort between musicians and our sound artists that are working together to, and it, sometimes the radios are floating around, sometimes they're stationary, but the audience is encouraged to move around and create their own mix.
Yes, this is called Radio 4x4, and taking its cue from improvised music, we generally get four artists many times who have never collaborated together and many times who have never played into a transmitter to go ahead and create an impromptu dialogue and sound sculpture construct. Each artist, instead of again playing into an amp, goes ahead and plays into a FM transmitter set up to one of the four available frequencies. Radios 20, 30, and upwards. Radios are tuned to one of the four frequencies, and as Tiana said, walking through the room, you get a multi-channel installation effect. Some people describe as similar to being in an aquarium of sound.
It's fairly portable and easy to set up. And we did it at home. You see a lot of laptops here, but that's just because they're light and portable. But when we do them in New York, there's equipment everywhere. People bring their analog stuff down and a lot of musical instruments, et cetera. So, but this looks very awesome. I sent this photo to my father after coming back from Poland, and he thought that I was involved in some cult or something. He didn't quite understand what was going on.
And this is the Radio 4x4 that we had staged in for the Gwangju Biennale in South Korea. In this version, the artists that we had worked with, two of our rosters of transmission artists, Melissa Dubin and Aaron Davidson, decided for us to go ahead and bring a sculptural and distributive element to the work. As you can see here, while we were improvising and playing a creative soundscape, Tom was also going ahead and recording the sound, burning a CD, and the CD was assembled in an assembly line process between the four of us, and I think you can flip ahead, sent out by a pulley system into the audience, and so the audience got to take home with them a ephemeral snippet of this performance.
Here's an audio sample from one that's sort of cacophonous. I'm not sure the sound quality is all that great, but yes. It's the idea. And each sound element would be on a different, you know, disparate radio and be immersed in be a stereo.
Somewhat similar to quadraphonic sound, and then you also hear the background sound of the room, which for sound artists, I think it's important to go ahead and perhaps not be so egotistical as a musician and saying that my melody must transplant and transport and remove you from your environment. I think in many ways what Radio 4x4 does is also help the listener and the artist to acknowledge the environment.
If you remember last night from the humming from Kathy Kennedy's thing, sometimes it can root you where you are, more corner queen. All right, enough of that. And this is a similar project, except...
Yes, it's a micro radio sound walk, and this here again, one frequency is used with several performers set up throughout an environment. In this case, it was the grounds of the...
Contemporary Art Museum in...
In Warsaw, and... people get a headset radio or can carry a portable radio, and as you walk from one low-power transmission field to the next, the sound changes and drifts out, and you hear the static as you leave the sphere of influence of one particular radio while staying on the radio station.
And this one was really fun because a lot of people brought bikes, so usually it's like a kind of leisurely sort of thing,
right.
but these people were like zooming around and like getting like a little merry-go-round quick
yes,
mix of what was
a
happening.
Full mix of
they were grinning. They were pretty happy. Then we do sort of gallery installations.
Yes, this one was called On the Air, where we set up the four channel architecture of Radio 4x4, but invited our artists to go ahead and intervene into that architecture in order to go ahead and create a four-channel sound work throughout the days. And radios were attached through helium balloons and placed throughout the gallery so that you've got the four-channel sounds, and then also had a visual representation of the airwaves and a visual representation of the room moving around and the sound moving around. This is Michelle McGuy's work. I think earlier we had seen some work from Lovid. This was part of White Box's White Noise series, and we were also attempting to incorporate live performance as well.
Joshua samples radio frequencies and then media interfaces, lights on the instrument.
Right. His shoes, here you can see him percussively manipulating trigger samples. Also, the steering wheel apparatus can also be used to sort of interact with sound from the radio dial. And so here's a way that artists can go ahead and sample and use some of the traditional sounds that you hear and make them into something new and unexpected.
Tom is a carpenter.
He's displaying here as an intervention into the actual walls of the gallery live. And you can see that he contact mic'd the sounds of his work.
They didn't show my performance. I guess they didn't like it.
Well, there's some limited time here.
So that's just
yes,
what the gallery looked like.
The ethereal quality of the balloons floating around.
And, of course, there's a lot of helium sucking and talking. And then the Dust Dive played the closing night, and it was totally crowded and really fun.
Now for a more static work. We have Airborne, where this was the result of a collaboration between Free 103.9 and the New Museum, where they were very interested in transmission art, and we sent out an open call and got some works here, which we will go ahead and see that were displayed in a more traditional
sculptural
museum environment. This is 31 Downs Wanderlost, which you can see here in many ways. People were able to engage with a sound element, as you can see here. This is Paul Davies' prayer antenna, where you were invited to go ahead and sit on the kneeler and then hear the voice of God talk to you through this antenna
headset. And there was a microphone elsewhere in the museum where you could be the voice of God if you desired.
Melissa Dobin and Aaron S. Davidson's Last and Lost Transmissions. Lovid's Ether Fairy, which was a
video
transmission here, where the audience was able to interact along with what you can see as the fairy there, which is suspended between wires, and by you as an audience member moving the the sliding fairy, you were interacting and changing the video image and sound image that you saw.
And heard.
Tariq Karula's Chop 10. He had taken the Arbitron ratings of the top 10 New York radio stations and set up a relay system which played a second of each of the top 10 radio stations in continuous succession. Mendy and Keith Obadicki's web-based project 419, or You Can't Watch a Masquerade by Standing Still in One Place. I don't think we have much of a sample from this. Neurotransmitters antenna sculpture, a working antenna sculpture that I don't think you can fully see here, but it was, I think, a ship, and it's entitled 12 Miles Out, based on the pirate radio stations that were nautical in nature in the genesis of that movement.
That's the end of our slideshow. I guess at this point we'll just open it up to question and answers if we have time for that.
Anyone?
Okay, again, if anyone wants to ask any questions, we could come to the microphone so everyone can hear.
Is that a little intimidating for anyone? Yeah.
I just have one quick question. I get asked this a lot, and I know there's various definitions, but how would you really define the difference between radio art and transmission art?
Well, as we were saying, I think that radio art is specifically about using FM, AM frequencies, and transmission art, as we were trying to say, may also involve various technologies, television, cell phone, walkie-talkie, web streams, and ideologies perhaps based on viral transmission, distribution. I think at the heart of all of this is a utopian ideal to open up access and distribution of ideas. And so while radio art in many cases still relies on access to a radio station or radio transmission equipment, I think that transmission art itself can have a much broader definition. One of the metaphors that I like to use is a pebble being thrown into a pond, and there you have the initial event, but you also have the rings that sort of radiate outside of that. And while radio art in our case may be the genesis of transmission art, we're hoping that transmission art itself may go ahead and influence people to go ahead and explore the avenues of communication and ideologies and how they are distributed, disseminated, accepted, and returned into culture, society, etc. Anyone else?
Anybody else? Sarah, leaping over chairs. Wow, he didn't fall. I'm impressed.
I'd just like to know a little more about your thoughts on the loss of momentum of the low-power radio movement in the States. And my second question, which is, I think, as much for folks here, you mentioned Stephen Denifer, and I'm just wondering if there's anyone else, ideally in Canada, who offers a kind of four-day, five-day build a radio station from transmitter to antenna kind of thing for folks who are new to that?
Okay. I can't answer that for the Canada. Perhaps you might ask Anna.
I would check out Prometheus Radio as a resource as well.
Yes, yeah. Prometheus Radio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, I think that the micro radio movement it has seen an ebb and flow. People are still accessing the media and the low power FM movement sort of splits people into two camps. There's a documentary by Michael Leahy called Making Waves where you can see sort of the disconnect between the libertarians and the more traditional left-wing movements that are accepting FCC control and still lobbying for low power FM, whereas the libertarian viewpoint is we don't need any regulations, we don't need to carry an emergency broadcast signal, I think as the United States itself is moving into a much more conservative and in many ways frightening landscape, it simply isn't the political climate of the anything can go 90s, and there are in many cases a lot more there's a lot more risk in Tampa, Florida, particularly because Florida has a large Caribbean immigrant community. The Caribbean cultures, Haiti, Puerto Rico, Cuba, Jamaica, many of them love their musical cultural identities, and these are identities that that aren't expressed on mainstream media, and so constantly they are putting up radio stations, and it's much more culturally ingrained in those cultures. As a result, the FCC office down there is so overworked, and I think thanks to changes in the Patriot Act, now it is a felony offense for a first offense, and the FCC does not need a warrant. The police can simply come to your house and seize your transmission equipment. Whereas before, and this is only really in Florida, but it may set a frightening precedent. So there's a greater, a much greater risk involved. I myself am sort of working on a conceptual way to try to do a project that it will happen in Tampa with a friend of mine that is a theoretically called free radio right now, and I'm attempting to have a 24/7 broadcast that has 11 recorded sound pieces that play in perpetuum. The first reading will be the Federal Communications Act of 1922, which sets the radio frequencies apart as public parklands, and then the next 10 pieces will be read by various age, genders, and races, each of the 10 First Amendments in the each of the 10 amendments of the Bill of Rights. And in this way, based on Andy Warhol's ideology of how oppressive technologies can be countermanded by accelerating the process, I hope to go ahead and engage the authorities into actually shutting down and a public service of basically telling people what their rights are.
And I deal with the issue in different ways. I do more sort of interventionist, sort of site-specific events where, for instance, some of those pictures I was showing, some friends and I wanted, there's this street that's maybe like Queen Street here or something in Brooklyn called Bedford Avenue that is turning into sort of, you know, a gentrified mess. And so for fun, one day we decided to reenact the 1968 student riots and got a lot of, made some costumes for the police. And then we got a lot of people from this nonsense list, this New York nonsense list, to act as the students. We made little dry ice bombs, as you can see me here, getting ready to throw one. And, you know, just put a police barricade up and stop traffic, and just had a little war for a couple of, for about 10 minutes. And I had gotten original material from the 1968 riots and transmitted it from a bookstore and had all the cars parked along the street play it from their car radios, and all the cafes along the street play it from the cafes because I'm friends with the people that work there. And so for about 20 minutes, all hell broke loose on Bedford, and then the police came and said, "You guys are acting like idiots, get out of here," and we ran, you know, and that was that. Or similar to the tune outside, we had this waterfront takeover day where some condos were coming into the neighborhood, and so we took over the space that was all fenced up. We cut down the fence, and we wanted to have bands playing there, but we didn't want the equipment confiscated, so we set up a venue and transmitted the sound that the bands were making to the park, or what we've created. It wasn't a park. It was going to be condos, but we made it a park for a day and had a great day there. So we just do sort of site-specific events that
are mobile and temporary,
exactly.
I think.
And then we tear it down and move on.
Peter Lamborn Wilson's work as Hakeem Bey, his book in the 90s, Temporary Autonomous Zone,
yeah.
Goes ahead and explains this ideology of utopian communities perhaps not being suited to being something permanent, but something that is transitory and mobile. And I think right now that the element of risk involved with setting up a permanent station, and as much as people may want to do that, I think that that we as activists and radio artists need to look at other models other than traditional architectures.
Yeah.
Yes.
And one last quick thing. Another thing that I did recently was with a group of Italian artists. We created a radio bomb, which is a transmitter and an iPod or some other playback device, and antenna all in one package, so that then you can you know, put it on a roof of a building and go away, and it broadcasts whatever you want. But anyway, I think we're running out of time. But
so, do we have time for a couple more questions, maybe? Sure. Okay. Yeah. Anybody else? Did you? Yeah. Okay.
So I'm curious about the tune-in events or performances.
Yes.
Sure, the best word. One of the things you were talking about was setting it up so that the audience could participate with the performances in a way that maybe they're not used to, certainly
mm-hmm.
not in the way that you would at a rave where you have to listen to one thing.
Right.
And people could even interact. People can talk. People can be listening and sharing with each other. Like, it's, you know, you could have someone listening to one performance in one ear and another in another ear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just really curious about what came of that, what the audience experience was like. It seems like, you know, art, successful art, often builds community and creates new ways for communities to interact. And so just be curious.
People liked it, and as a result, I mean, there are a lot of sort of spin-off transmission things happening in New York that don't have anything to do with us. So a friend of mine, Veronica, that's ironically named Veronica, I suppose, in this group called the Madagascar Institute, has been throwing a series of silent concerts using the same idea. You know, there was a recent gallery show on Bedford Avenue that was about transmission, that was about the game of telephone, you know, and had a sculpture and painting, and I went because a friend of mine was playing the opening, and I had no idea that it was even there. So, you know, it is developing a community, and it's.
You know, pretty much, I think everybody from people who are interested in conceptual art and media art to fans of perhaps a particular band that's playing. And in curating these events, we try to go ahead and have a very good mix between our stable of transmission artists, other experimental artists who may not fit in one genre or subgenre, and then also some of the established video artworks. So I think that everybody who comes away with this is like, well, wow, this is like nothing that we have ever experienced before. And I think even if that's the only result, then that's quite good enough. It's at this point, staging it is something of a cost and time constraint that we're not certain if we need a good deal amount of funding and interest in order to go ahead and be able to pull this off. But I certainly see that it as something that could have a very wide range and a wide interest. What's the other alternate? But that being said, I don't necessarily want it. Would like to see it evolve into, say, it might lose something if it was a club that had six channels of sound that you could listen to simultaneously. Although I think even talking about that, maybe we'll probably see something like that in the next 5 to 10 years.
I mean, the other thing is it's something that we've done, but part of what we're doing is exploring with the genre, so we don't want to stick to the same things over and over again.
This is a is someone else? Okay. Oh, it's mine now.
I'm just wondering. There's been a lot of talk about possibilities about internet broadcasting. And I really appreciate your commitment to traditional broadcasting, but I'm wondering what your thoughts about the difference between the two, especially when you're talking about the difficulties in setting up a micro radio now. Is internet broadcasting the way to go now, and what do you feel, what's special about traditional broadcasting, and what could you lose going towards the internet and moving away from it?
Well, I think that's a two-part question. I'll answer the second part first. What's special about the traditional broadcasting, of course, is sort of the access. You know, it takes a lot of money to buy a computer and to have it at your disposal for your listening pleasure. You know, if you're at a public library, you're probably not going to be on Free 103.9 listening to experimental sound art. You know, you'll probably be checking your email or whatever. But almost anyone can afford an FM. Receiver. And also it creates a community because it is geographically, especially with micro radio, it's sort of your small sort of area that you can kind of... The reason that I'm involved in radio is because I think people don't communicate enough, And so whether or not... I don't really care which technology you use. I think it's just... it's just, I like creating situations wherein people interact in different, new and unusual ways, and the sound that I create is usually a residue of that. That said, the good thing about the internet is obviously that we can stream what we're doing right here in New York and elsewhere, and anyone can pick it up, so it isn't geographically isolated. I like using a hybrid approach, doing some micro and some non-micro. Of course, the other good thing about the internet is right now it's not as regulated as the FM. If you're doing traditional FM radio, you have a lot of limitations to what you're able to do and say. And right now, the internet is still fairly open, but as that closes up, then we're going to have to figure out something else. It's not so much about this or that technology as sort of this push towards communication, and using whatever's out there. And I like using open source technology. I run open source audio workshops from my bedroom. I have a meeting. We were talking about women in experimental radio. I have a monthly meeting with women that are interested in doing radio, and we do skill shares. And so that's sort of. Do you want to add to that or?
Well,
Yeah, I think that those are some of the main things. You know, each has its pros and its cons. Another good thing about perhaps our internet stream is that usually there's a scrolling window, so you can immediately see who the artist is that you're listening to, and in many cases we have a link to where you can buy the CD. So for our artists, that's a good way for them to go ahead and us to help them with distribution. However, an analog signal, I think is more egalitarian and more democratic, and it allows people to go ahead and stumble across it much easier than you would say perhaps ever stumble across Free 103.9 if you were searching the millions of websites, as opposed to perhaps the 20 or less stations on the broadband.
Yeah, I think if we can move on just a bit more quickly here, because we do have a couple of people. Just one quick question, which probably doesn't have a quick answer, but I'm looking at all of your gear and all the different ways that you're transmitting and everything, and I have a serious case of gear lust too. So I look at that stuff and I keep thinking, wow, there's just so much to learn, so many possibilities. But I find at the same time, everything is moving so fast, the technology is moving so fast, it's like, and our own ideas in our heads are moving so fast too, and it's like, I find the frustration as the technology changes is, you're spending all your time learning about the gear, and the gee whiz factor kicks in. And so I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about how you balance the technological needs of what we're doing with the need to deepen the content, given that it's like having to learn how to use different tools every single time a new technology comes along.
I feel like that's sort of a question and an answer in one statement.
Good, then we can move on quickly.
I think one of the ways that we address that is by being a collective effort, and that allows people to specialize. And so if we have somebody who does Max MSP work, then it's great that we have access to that person and access to their knowledge, and it sort of frees us up as individuals to go ahead and pursue our own individual works. I myself am very much an analog retro person, just mostly for cost and time and learning things. And I think, as we see with radio to many people, analog radio seems to be an archaic technology, and yet as we're learning, there is so much more that we can do. So as technologies rapidly increase, and as they seem to ossify and move on to new things, we have people who are exploring both the frontier and then also reverse engineering.
So what you're saying is, don't try to do everything.
Or, do everything in succession.
Okay. So, right. Anna, I think you had a question.
Actually, I just had more of a comment, just sort of a follow-up to the previous question. And one of the things that I think that Free 103 does really well is to kind of do this hybrid trick of mixing the local of micro-broadcasting with this kind of trans-local effect of having an internet presence and doing a lot of works that involve streaming as well as, micro-radio sort of on different ends of things. And I think this is a sort of an important political choice as radio activists, that in the face of this kind of overwhelming generic globalization, we embrace a kind of translocality so that people are still located in a place, but there's communication between those places. So.
Yes, exactly. We can go from micro, temporary, site-specific to global in perpetuity and hopefully many places in between.
I've worked with a group called TMP that we set up an experimental streaming night where people in 7 different countries took street sounds, sampled street sounds, and then streamed them to each other, and then we rebroadcast them in our own streets. So it was, and some of them were remixed and some of them weren't, and so it is definitely an international tool.
Okay, any more? Let's see. It is now time check 11:45. See how those radio conventions get established? I'm on the radio, so I have to do time checks, station IDs. So
it is now
Darren has a question.
11:53.
Well, I don't actually have a question. I just have an announcement about lunch.
Hooray!
If we feel that we've said all we can say, we might as well have some more time to talk with each other.
Great.
Okay, that sounds great.
It appears to be that the food is ready outside from what I can tell. Directly out in the atrium here, there's a buffet table. You can help yourself. And there's a door leading down to a stairwell, which you can take. I believe that'll lead you outside to the back, and there's some umbrella tables set up outside, so you can eat outside if you wish. So help yourself, and we will return here at 1 o'clock. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you, and on behalf of Tiana, Tom, Galen, and myself, we'd like to thank you for your attention. And I also, if you want to talk to Tiana or I later, we'll be available. And I also have a few sample CDs of some of our open call radio works and some recordings from Tune in the Kitchen, if anybody would be interested in those. Thanks.
And if anyone wants to play co-host Radio Art DJ over lunch hour, then I will be here. So after you're done.